Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Grim Hancock reporting for Michael Savage with an inside scoop. I have a recording of why President Obama was looking for whose ass to kick. Let's listen in.
Okay, to get the pressure off of you, Mr. President, for this oil spill, I've got the perfect tagline. You ready for this? You're going to say, I'm going to figure out whose ass to kick.
Whose ass?
Doesn't that sound great? I want to figure out whose ass to kick.
Whose ass to kick?
Let's rehearse it. I was there a month ago. Blame the talking heads. Blame the media. Blame the right-wing extremists.
Before most of these talking heads were even paying attention to the Gulf.
You had your boots on the ground. You were talking to people.
A month ago, I was meeting with fishermen down there, standing in the rain, talking about what a potential crisis this
could be. Good. Say it like this. I'm not wasting my time talking to experts because this isn't a college seminar.
I don't sit around just talking to experts because this is a college seminar.
I talk to the people because the people know better. That's the way to do it.
We talk to these folks because they potentially have the best answers.
All right, now for the crescendo. I'm looking for whose ass to kick.
So I know whose ass to kick.
That's good.
Kick whose ass?
Man, that's good.
Good.
It's so good.
Well, there you have it. My suggestion, if he wants to know whose ass to kick, is to go look in the mirror. Back to you, Michael Savage.
The comic genius of David Rubin on the Savage Nation. We figured we'd open with that because we know the president's in very deep trouble right now. We know the trouble he is in is so deep that he's now on the road selling health care again. In other words, he sold health care with every trick, every game in town, every threat, every game and known to dirty politics. Him and the evil one, Nancy Pelosi, ramrodded this budget-breaking, socialized medicine bill down the throats of most Americans who do not want it. And now he's selling it again. I guess one of the genius handlers said, go out and change the subject. The American people are so stupid that they won't even know there's an oil spill in the Gulf if you talk about health care again. Incidentally, talking about the administration, I hear the Obama Navy is going to commission a new ship. Yeah, that's right, and it's going to be called the Bonnie Frank. But instead of launching it, they'll be raunching it. And it only goes in reverse. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So today is another voters in the 12 states head to the polls, turnout varied in the states that will have the biggest impact come November. We have nothing to report. Second rig may be leaking oil. Police step up search for Oregon boy. That's a terrible story. A 7-year-old boy is taken to school by his grandmother. She says goodbye to him in the hallway, and he's disappeared now for 5 days. How could this be going on in the United States of America? Are there that many predators on the loose in this country? And that leads us to the next question. We know that the laws are so rigged in favor of the predators that they know the worst that will happen to them is they get 30 years in jail in order to enjoy sexual activities with the inmates. What if we change the laws that if you're caught molesting a child and you're convicted of molesting a child and the evidence is clear and you've given one trial and one trial only and one appeal only, you have your genitals cut off on pay-per-view television and the money goes to the family of the child whose life you destroyed? How would that work? Do you think that might reduce the amount of child molestation in America? I do. Don't call me on it because you know I'm right. The chance of it happening with the Congress we have, of course, is zero. They won't even get tough with the pirates. They bring them to New York for a trial. Pirates being brought to New York for a trial. What would you do if you were an impoverished Yemenite, Somali, excuse me, and you know that the worst that could happen to you if you go out and raid a ship If you don't hit the $1 million jackpot from the cowardly owners of the ships, the worst that happens to you is you get taken to New York. You get better food than you ever had in your life. You get the girl lawyers from NYU giving you sex in the bathroom during lawyer breaks. And you wind up on the Today Show with Matt Lauer. I mean, how much better can it be? The U.S. Marines are called Leathernecks for a reason. And the reason is the U.S. Navy was created to fight pirates, again, Muslim pirates at that, in the early 1800s. We had no Navy, but we had merchant ships. We were a young nation, lots of trade going on. We had ships going into that dangerous area. And pirates from Africa would raid the merchant ships and kill the crews and take the cargo. So the merchants of early America demanded that the government help them. And unlike the government of today, the government created the U.S. Navy to help the merchants. The Navy was a warship. It was very fast. It was ironclad. And it had men on it called U.S. Marines. They were on the ship to fight the pirates with swords and flintlocks. And they had leather necks put on their necks, swaths of leather, to protect their necks against the pirates' sword blows. The thing is, though, when they caught pirates, they didn't bring them back to Boston or Washington for a trial. They gutted them and threw them to the sharks. It definitely eliminated piracy in the seas. How have we devolved to such a point that we have the most powerful navy on the earth with people running it who are afraid to fire a shot? Answer. Well, the answer is there is no answer. There is no answer. Certain things there's no answer to. So Obama wants to kick some ass for the oil spill. We all know that he failed us. We all know that it's his disaster. We know he owns it, which is why he is on the road selling health care again. Everything that was done with the Gulf oil spill by the Obama administration has been wrong. Initially, Team Obama wanted to keep this problem away from the president. It took Obama 12 days to show up in the region. Democrats criticized Bush for waiting 4 days after Katrina to go to New Orleans, right? Let's talk about the strategy of barrier berms. These temporary sand islands block the flow of oil into fragile wetlands and marshes. But berm construction requires approval from the Corps of Engineers and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Louisiana officials asked permission to build these berms on May 11th. They did not hear back because the feds were conducting environmental reviews while the oil was washing ashore, killing the sea life. The dispersants were not used properly. The federal government was even slower in the question of dispersants. Those are chemicals used to break up the oil and hasten its evaporation from the surface of the water. Again, they failed on that. Yes, the Gulf spill is Obama's Katrina. There's no question about it. And the president's dangerous inexperience is coming home to roost. There's a very well-written article on this subject by Byron York that I linked up on michaelsavage.com. And I would like to summarize some of the failures of Obama. Washington Examiner Byron York: spill reveals Obama's lack of experience. And we mean lack of executive experience. I want to read you the first paragraph. In mid-February 2008, fresh from winning a bunch of Super Tuesday primaries, Barack Obama granted an interview to 60 Minutes correspondent Steve Croft. "When you sit down and look at your resume," Croft said to Obama, "there's no executive experience. And in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, the only thing that you've actually run was the Harvard Law Review." "Well, I've run my Senate office and I've run this campaign," Obama said. 7 months after receiving the Democrat presidential nomination, Obama talked with CNN. At the time, the news was dominated by Hurricane Gustav, which was headed towards New Orleans and threatening to become a Katrina-like disaster. CNN said, "Some of your Republican critics have said you don't have the experience to handle a situation like this. They, in fact, have said that Governor Palin has more executive experience than you." Obama answered, "Governor Palin's town of Wasilla has, I think, 50 employees. We have got 2,500 in this campaign. I think their budget is maybe $12 million a year. You know, we have a budget of about three times that just for the month. So I think that our ability to manage large systems and to execute, has been made clear over the last couple of years," said Obama. Obama ignored Palin's experience as governor of Alaska, which was considerably bigger than the Obama campaign. But Obama's point was clear. "If you're worried about my lack of executive experience, look at my campaign. running a first-rate campaign. You see, he thought that running a campaign was like running a country. 1-800-449-8255. What can you say that has not been said so far? Fact of the matter is, Obama is not up to the job. And if he had any honor, he would retire. He would quit and he would let more competent people take over this job. That's what he would do for the sake of America. But you know that that is never going to happen. And by the way, if you look at how the government has mishandled this disaster, I want to ask you something. How do you think they would handle a dirty bomb in New York City? Do you think they would do a better job on that? Do you think that this government is able to protect you from Al-Qaeda or one of the other terrorist groups if they wanted to set off a bomb in Times Square? Do you think they would know how to deal with that disaster any more than they know how to deal with the disaster in the Gulf? I'll take your calls. Florida, Lauren, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, how are you? I have been trying to get you for 2 years, and let me tell you, I turned 53, and I can say whatever I want. And God's gospel is first, and you're the second. Believe it.
Well, I don't know whether it's second to God, but I know that it's my truth, and I try to call him like I see him.
It's like a prediction, you know. I feel like I'm living in the end times, and you're like predicting, you know. It's so awesome to talk to you because you make the most sense.
I try to give you the plain truth, and I appreciate it when people tell me that. 1-800-449-8255. I understand that Joe Biden, sorry. Joe Biden is the new Al Gore, only he didn't invent the internet and he's not divorced. And he didn't come up with a scam about the climate. But he's definitely helping us with the spill. They're sending Joe Biden to Africa. That's right. Because of the ongoing crisis of the Gulf oil spill, Joe Biden is off to Africa for a while. Apparently that's where he is going. We don't know why he's going there. The nation has a $13 trillion national debt, which under Obama is now projected to surpass the nation's entire economic output. And according to a White House trip outline, Biden will meet with key leaders in Egypt, Kenya, and South Africa. He will not be meeting with irrelevant leaders, only key leaders. He will not be meeting with unknowns in Kenya, such as Obama's relatives. He'll be meeting with key leaders in Kenya. We have no idea why he is going there, but we do know that since Biden did such a great job watching the opening of the Olympic Winter Games in Vancouver earlier this year, Biden will watch the opening of the 2010 World Cup. And we expect that Paul McCartney will be there to greet him. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, New York City, WOR. Mo, you're first up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Welcome to the program.
Savage, I just want to tell you that you guys should give Obama a little chance. I mean, the man is trying.
It's only been a year and a half, and there's the worst ecological disaster in history, and he's done nothing. How much more of a chance should he be given?
But Obama didn't do that.
Well, that's right, but he's the president. He's supposed to know how to solve crises. Do you think he's solving the crisis properly?
He's trying. What Obama have to do?
He shouldn't have to do anything. He should only have to try. The important thing with affirmative action is that you try, not that you succeed. Isn't that correct? In other words, it's not important that you get straight A's to get into Harvard. You should be able to get C's and get into Harvard. Then you should say, I tried hard. And the trying is as important as getting the A's, correct? All right, take a walk, okay? What an idiot. Look what I get on the show here. I'll be back.
Savage.
Just when you were looking for accurate information about what this reform would mean for you, there were a lot of opponents of health care reform generally that sought to deny you that information. And they ran some pretty nasty rumors in hopes that it would scare folks.
All right, so here's Obama on the road today, not talking about the greatest environmental disaster in American history, if not world history, because I really don't know if there's anything greater. He certainly didn't cause it, but he should be working harder from day one to have tried to control it. He did not use the Navy. He did not approve the building of sand berms. He did not let his Interior Department act fast enough. He did not even go down there for 12 days. Of course, now he's down there engaging Creoles, Cajuns, and anybody else who will listen to him. in order to show that he really cares, talking to fishermen. But the fact of the matter is he isn't much for actually doing anything. He is a consummate salesman. But guess what? He's already sold the health care bill. Now he's taking back the sale by going out and selling it again because he's trying to change the subject. But the people aren't buying it, by the way. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I guess we're talking about Obama's dangerous inexperience. I guess we're talking about the shocking incompetence of this administration. And I guess we're asking ourselves, how did they get away with it? The man is running around like a child with someone else's credit cards, bankrupting his parents' accounts. It's unbelievable. How in the world does anyone think this is going to end? The man is using our tax dollars going forward 50 years as though it's his private bank. He's trampling on our nation's treasury in a way that exceeds all of the presidents that have preceded him. He is like King Ludwig II of Bavaria. For those of you who have read the history of King Ludwig II of Bavaria. Chicago, Paul, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Savage, I work in a manufacturing company. I'm a manager there. And when there's a problem, we look at what happened, what we did wrong, what we need to do to fix it, how do we satisfy the customer, and if kicking somebody's ass is needed, we'll do that at a certain point. But that's not the first thing we look at. We need to fix the problem.
Yeah, of course that's how a businessman thinks. But remember, Obama was never a businessman. All he did was go to Harvard on affirmative action, and they gave him the Harvard Law Review as a plum in order to make him look even better. Nobody ever said no to Obama. Ever. He has had no criticism in his life. Do you understand that? Does anyone really understand who this man is? The skids were greased for him from the time he was a child. Everybody said yes to him. Nobody said no. Nobody ever criticized him. He does not do well with criticism. And so he always evades and changes the subject because it becomes too uncomfortable for him to understand he may actually be incompetent.
Savage.
This community could have made excuses. Well, our kids have fewer advantages. Our schools have fewer resources. How can we compete? You could have spent years pointing fingers, blaming parents, blaming teachers, blaming the principal, blaming the superintendent, blaming the president.
And so Obama was telling children yesterday at Kalamazoo Central High School, don't make excuses. Take responsibility, not just for your successes, but for your failures as well. And he says, the truth is, no matter how hard you work, you won't necessarily ace every class or succeed in every job. And he says, and when things go wrong, it's the easiest thing in the world to start looking around for someone to blame. Your professor was too hard. Your boss was a jerk. The coach was playing favorites. Your friend just didn't understand. And then Obama said to the students, we see it every day out in Washington with folks calling each other names and making all sorts of accusations on TV. I'd like to get the whole quote, by the way. And then he said to the students, pointing fingers and blaming parents is not the road to follow. Well, it seems to me that Obama's been doing just that. For example, he's been using President Bush as a scapegoat for everything from the deficit to America's image abroad. Obama, over the past 17 months, has selectively blamed the Bush administration for all the problems he now faces. They're even blaming Bush and Cheney for the oil spill. And one of Obama's favorite rhetorical devices is the figurative mop he uses to clean up what he says were the mistakes of Bush. He says, I don't mind cleaning up the mess that some other folks made. That's what I signed up to do. And he even said that Scott Brown in Massachusetts and his upset victory was a result of the Bush-directed outrage in January. Nothing to do with him. It was about Bush. Now, either Obama is a consummate liar or he's out of touch with reality or a combination of both, which would not be unique to him, by the way. It is very common in the political class to be out of touch with reality and a liar. In fact, it's the nature of politics, as a matter of fact. And you can get away with it as long as there are good times. and as long as things are going rather smoothly. But when you have two wars going on, and you own the war in Afghanistan, and a 1,000th body bag has come home, and nobody knows why we are in Afghanistan, and you couple that with the greatest environmental disaster in American history, and you couple that with a $13 trillion debt, what you have is a president totally incapable of running America. And it's getting worse. It's not getting better. And the honorable thing for him to do would be to resign. Don't even talk about impeachment. It's not going to happen. He should simply step aside and let the Democrat Party present somebody who knows how to run the country, or we're all going to suffer forever from this president. This is no longer a college where he got pushed ahead for obvious reasons. And they say, look the other way. The guy can't even spell, for example. We know what goes on in high school. We know what goes on in college. They graduate kids who had 2 and 2 and get 5. And they give them, do you know that they're giving half credit for that now? Because you're able to add, you could put 2 plus 2 and put down 5. You get 50% credit for that answer in California now. Not zero, because it's wrong, but you tried to get it right. You're actually able to write 2, and then you can write plus, and then you can write 2. I'm not making this up. In very much the same way, we have a president who wants to be credited for trying and for speaking with a booming voice that he inherited from his blessed father. But it takes more than rhetoric to run a country, doesn't it? Maybe he ought to try a career in talk radio. He might do very well in talk radio. 1-800-449-8255. Joe in Denver, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I disagree with the analogy that this is Obama's Katrina. This oil disaster, I can't even call it a spill. It's so much worse. It has long-term ecological ramifications. At least with Katrina, you know, they can rebuild somewhat, but this is going to have ramifications.
You know, you're absolutely right. This is far worse than Katrina, because there you had seawater submerging houses. But there were no, so far as I know, and I could be wrong, there were no long-term environmental ramifications to the seawater breaching the levee.
Yes.
On the other hand, the oil is causing perhaps semi-permanent damage.
And we don't know when it's going to stop either. This could go on for years. We have no idea. Now it's going to.
Well,
go
what if the oil now gets picked up by the Gulf Stream and whips around on the other side of Florida and goes up the Atlantic coast and winds up in the Potomac River? Do you think we might get some action out of Washington then?
You know, it's so horrible seeing these birds on the show. It's just terrible. Just terrible.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking to see a pelican trying to fly and not being able to get off the ground. It's a real disaster. It's enough to ruin your day. But that's what you get from environmental geniuses like the Democrats, most of whom do not sail boats. They don't climb mountains. They don't fly airplanes. They don't hunt and they don't fish. But they know all about global warming and the environment. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Pete in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, you know, you were talking about who to blame, and I blame myself. I grew up, I studied Ayn Rand, William F. Buckley, de Tocqueville, and this is exactly who she warned us against, and yet I vote for him.
I'm missing something. You read William F. Buckley and voted for Obama?
I read Buckley as a kid. I read Ayn Rand, and I was so stupid and hateful towards
Bush. Something's missing. Wait, you read William F. Buckley Jr. and voted for Obama? How does that compute?
I can't. Mostly Ayn Rand, and he is the antithesis. I mean, Rand warned against this product of of equal opportunity, and yet as a reactionary, I voted for him. I just it was like. And my father warned me about it before he.
So, in other words, you presented a protest vote against the Republican Party under Bush. Is that what you did?
You know, Bush had.
All right, all right. So, why waste my time? Why do I have to listen to you kvetching on the show what you did wrong? Why is that of any interest to me or you? I'm still getting over the itch, and no one asked me about it. I would have thought by now someone would have said, "What about the itch, Mike?" But no, you don't care about me. Not one call about my agony. All right, that's my problem, not yours. Moses had boils he had to deal with. He had boils. He got a hunchback. God said, you're selected. Why me? I don't want to do it. I'm not good looking. I got a bad back. My skin itches. Leave me alone. No, I'm picking you. No, I'm not good looking. Pick someone who looks good. Pick someone like Barack Obama. No, I'm not picking him because he's a phony. I'm picking you with the hunch and with the back and with the skin. Why? Because I know you're somebody I can trust, said God to Moses. Oh, Lordy. Look, if you lose your sense of humor, you become Bonnie Frank. Did you hear that soundbite from Bonnie Rank today? Bonnie Rank gave a speech to a bunch of young boys, I mean young students, one and the same. You know, he likes those groups. And he was imploring the young Spartacist League, known as the Young Democrats, to actually give them more authority. I'm not making this up. Now listen to what you're listening to. This is Bonnie Rank. Hold it. Hold it. Hold. This is Bonnie Rank, Demon Cat, Massachusetts, telling young Spartacist League, meaning Democrats, to give the Demon Cats more authority. Listen to Bonnie Rank.
You can reach out to your fellow young people and make it clear to them that where they may not be satisfied with everything we've done, we're not satisfied with everything we've done, the way to cure that is to give us more authority and more ability.
Okay. And they cheered him. Do you think Bonnie Rank should be given more authority and more ability, or let us say a jail sentence for lying to the American people as a career? New York City, WOR. Don, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael Savage. It's cool to talk to you, man.
Thanks.
All right, man, you know. And I appreciate botany, and I appreciate what you've done in your life.
You're one of the people who know that I've done things other than radio. Thank you.
What I'm saying here is that I think Halliburton is responsible for this oil mess down in the Gulf. So what's with Halliburton? I don't know much about that corporation. What's with them?
Well, wait, you just said they're responsible, so why are you asking me about them? If you know what they did, tell us what Halliburton did.
Well, aren't they part of the drilling? Or don't they do something with the oil rigs, Halliburton Corporation?
Well, so far as we know, BP leased it out to a drilling company. I don't know what Halliburton had to do with it. The issue is not who did it. The issue is why has the government dragged its heels in not trying to contain the spill?
What's going on with that? But I think we got to look into this Halliburton Corporation. That's what we really got to do.
Well, I think we should disinter Richard Nixon's body and exhume his body and see if he had something to do with it.
No, please, huh?
No, I think Nixon did it. I truly do. I think if Obama were to spend enough of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division's genius, he could find that it goes all the way back to Nixon, if not to Goldwater himself. Chicago, Jody, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Listen, I was worried about you. I thought hydrocortisone cream. I thought anti-itch cream, something for you.
No. You can't use cortisone cream when you have a disseminated itch ranging from your eyeballs to your toes. You can't put cream on your body. You don't want that much cortisone on your body anyway. That's a disaster. Do you want to know what I did to get it under control or not?
Okay, tell me.
All right, I'm telling you and everyone else. This is the itch part two on the Savage Nation, because that's all that was on your mind. Remember that. You understand what I'm talking about. I had a disseminated itch yesterday. I think I took a chance that it was caused by the crab salad sandwich that I had on Sunday. I'm tracing it back. I can't for 100% be sure. I pulled up with my boat. There were only hamburgers and crab and shrimp available on a takeout menu. So foolishly, because I'm on a low-fat diet, I got one burger for the people who are with me, and I got myself crab. Oh, well, nothing went wrong that day. But that night, as I laid down, I started to itch. And all day yesterday, I told you, I left the show in a horrendous state. The eyeballs were itching, the earlobes were itching, the nostrils were itching. No, it was getting bad. And I said to you that I'm taking a Benadryl, which I did. I took it a half an hour before the show ended. And the minute I come back, I'll tell you what I did that night. I'll be right back. I'm going to give you a little more background of Obama's dangerous inexperience, and that we're in very, very grave trouble, because we can see with the Gulf oil spill, he's out of his depth, number one. He's trying to change the discussion to healthcare to show you how, I don't know the word for this, and I'm lost for words, which is very bad for a person in talk radio. Do they actually think that you're that stupid, that you want to hear him talk about healthcare right now rather than the Gulf oil spill? Who would listen to this man? And moreover, who is advising him? And number three, where is Rahm Emanuel? Why am I the only one asking the question? Rahm Emanuel is AWOL. He's the chief of staff to Obama. Is he back in Chicago? If so, is he advising Obama? Do you think Rahm Emanuel, as skilled and as intelligent as he is, would advise him to go out and start talking about health care at a time like this? I can't imagine Emanuel would do that. You may not like Emanuel's politics, but don't ever call him stupid, please. Not in my presence. Now, to get back to the itch, then I'll tell you about the U.S. Navy and the Barbary pirates and leathernecks and how to treat the Somali pirates, which is not with a trial in New York, but with a gutting and throwing them to the sharks, and why they're doing it to us. But that's second. The itch is first. So I took the Benadryl, didn't touch it. I go home. I take my normal 4 grams of vitamin C whenever I have any kind of problem to try that first. 4,000 milligrams, nothing, didn't touch it. So I said, now I'm really in trouble because you figure it's an antioxidant. It's somewhat of an NSAID, ascorbic acid in large doses. It didn't work. Took an aspirin, didn't work. I said, this is not good. So I spoke with a very wise woman who knows much more about medicine than most of the doctors I know. And we were talking about dinner, and I said, I'm almost afraid to go to dinner because I don't want to put any food in my body, given that this is getting, you know, this is bad. So she said, how about going to the Chinese that you like, which you haven't been to in months, that has that hot green sauce? I said, how could I eat hot green sauce? It's liable to make it worse. She said, well, like cures like. She said, you wrote a book on homeopathy 20 years ago. She said, it's always worked for your illnesses before. And remember when you were dying, you almost died from food poisoning in Thailand. And the first thing you ate was a spicy pizza with garlic the next day. I did. I swear, the first thing I reached for was pizza with chopped garlic on it the day after the worst food poisoning incident of my life. I was near death the night before. So it's a weird thing. I said, all right, well, let's say some of the remnant of that, whatever that did it to me, if it's foodborne, let's try the Chinese. I'll know right away. So before I left the house, I drank a half a beer to test the alcohol. And you know what? The alcohol worked a little bit. So I figured, all right, I'm going to go to the restaurant and drink too much and eat too much. Mild brioche, that's the thing. So I go there. We go out on the Geary Avenue where there's one Chinese restaurant after another, one after the other. Incredible. I go to a place that serves a kind of food called Hakka, which is a clay pot dish, which I signed off on. Remember I said it was no good anymore? But the sauce is unbelievable. So I go back. I ordered salt-baked chicken. I'm just giving a quick rundown. They have a house specialty, salt-baked chicken, but it's not salty. It's a strange phenomenon, but it's the most delicious chicken. I hate chicken, but it's the only chicken I like. And then I got a seafood basket, which again you would think, are you crazy? And I dipped it like mad in the green sauce. It's a sweet hot chili sauce. I don't know how to explain it. I dipped it like crazy. I drank 2 beers, and the itch more or less almost went away completely. It's still there in slight remnant. So the like cures like. In other words, if it had gotten worse, I would have stopped eating altogether, and then I would have said, okay, it's not foodborne. It's probably from another aspect of the environment. But that's called it's called deduction. That's how a thinking mind works. It's something that the president's not capable of. In other words, if you see an oil spill like this, the first thing to do is ask yourself, how do you stop it? You don't start blaming people. What do you use to stop it? Jindal of Louisiana, the governor, has been begging him for permission to let him erect temporary sand berms, and 5 different U.S. agencies under Obama were fighting with each other over whether he can build them because it might damage the environment. You hear this? It just shows you the stupidity of the people in government. Now to get back to the thing I raised before, the pirates, even though it's not in the news, it's on my mind because we have a Navy that doesn't fire a shot, and it's pissing me off. I'm a member of the Navy League. I'm a lifetime member of the Navy League. I love the Navy, and I cannot for the life of me understand how so many admirals cannot be firing a shot when we have so many enemies around the world. Case in point, the pirates. So the Navy SEALs shot 1 or 2 pirates, and the command had to come out of somewhere in Washington or Tampa Bay. They had the pirates in their sights for 4 hours, by the way, the snipers, on the rafts, had the snipers in their sights for 4 or 5 hours. They were not allowed to fire a shot, the same way Obama's not letting them build the berms. You hear this? Now, the United States and the Barbary pirates. 1784, first American ship seized by pirates from Morocco. Right? What happens? The Americans had a president, Thomas Jefferson, actually, who was ambassador to France, and John Adams, then the ambassador to Britain. And they meet in London with Mr. Aja, the ambassador to Britain from Tripoli, where the piracy occurred. The Americans asked Aja why his government was hostile to American ships. even though there had been no provocation. The ambassador's response was reported to the Continental Congress. Listen carefully. It was written in their Quran that all nations which had not acknowledged the prophet were sinners, whom it was the right and duty of the faithful to plunder and enslave, and that every Muslim who was slain in this warfare was sure to go to paradise. He said also that the man who was the first to board a vessel had one slave over and above his share, and that when they sprang to the deck on an enemy ship, every sailor held a dagger in each hand and a third in his mouth, which usually struck such terror into the foe that they cried out for quarter at once. And so they started paying off the pirates with bribery. In fact, it reached so bad that the bribery amounted to 20% of United States government annual revenues in 1800. And so they set up a navy. They stopped paying the ransom, because by late 1793, a dozen American ships had been captured, goods had been stripped, and everyone enslaved by the Muslims who said it was their duty as Muslims. Did you hear what I just said to you? Did you hear that? After the debate, the United States Navy was born in March 1794. Six frigates were authorized, and so began the construction of the United States, the Constellation, the Constitution, and three other frigates. The military presence helped to stiffen American resolve to resist the continuation of ransom to the pirates. It led to the two Barbary Wars along the North African coast. It was not until 1815 that naval victories ended ransom payments by the United States. And here we have come full circle with the most powerful navy in the world, unable to fire a shot because of Barack Hussein Obama's policies of appeasement.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Don't make excuses. Take responsibility not just for your successes. Take responsibility where you fall short as well. But you're not going to ace every class. You're not going to succeed the first time you try something. There are going to be times when you screw up. There will be times where you hurt people you love. There will be times where you make a mistake and you stray from the values that you hold most deeply. And when that happens, it's the easiest thing in the world to start looking around for somebody else to blame. Your professor was too hard. Your boss was a jerk. The coaches was playing favorites. Your friend just didn't understand. Your wife. Oh, no.
So that's Obama telling high school students don't make excuses, and yet he spent his entire tenure of 17 months. Is it 17 months already or 16 months, 15 months? Looking around for someone to blame. He says, don't make excuses, take responsibility. Well, let's look at if he practices what he preaches to the poor children who have to listen to him. On America's challenges, Obama, when I showed up after inauguration, they had left a big mess on the floor. So I got a mop and I started cleaning up their mess. Norfolk, Virginia, 10-27-09. On the economy, President Obama, by any measure, my administration inherited a fiscal disaster. 3-4-09. On the deficits, President Obama, now, if we had taken office in ordinary times, I would have liked nothing more than to start bringing down the deficit. But we took office amid a crisis. State of the Union, 12710. On the budget. My budget does not attempt to solve every problem or address every issue. It reflects the stark reality of what we have inherited. A $1 trillion deficit, a financial crisis, and a costly recession. 22409. How about on Democrat electoral losses? Is he making excuses? Well, let's listen. He says, here's my assessment of not just the vote in Massachusetts, but the mood around the country. People are angry and they're frustrated, not just because of what happened in the last year or 2 years, but what's happened over the last 8 years. Oh, really? So again, he's passing the buck. On the oil spill, is he accepting responsibility? Well, let's see what he said. When Interior Secretary Ken Salazar took office, he found the Minerals and Management Services Agency that had been plagued by corruption for years. Is he passing the buck? On his administration's economic actions, President Obama. Well, we had to act fast. And unfortunately, we didn't have all the tools that we needed to act fast because you had a previous Congress and a previous administration that had left a $1.3 trillion deficit wrapped up in a bow that turned surpluses into deficits as a consequence of a whole host of irresponsible policies. So now it's at $6 trillion. It's going to rise to $19,600,000,000,000 by the year 2015. King Ludwig II was a piker compared to Obama. Shall I go on? How about his Blame America First tour around the world? How about on Guantanamo, Gitmo, which he still hasn't closed because he found that he doesn't know where to send the terrorists? How about the trial of the terrorists in New York City? He still hasn't picked a new city to try them because there is certainly something in it for him to try them in New York. It's unbelievable to me. So there it is, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Debt rise to $19,600,000,000,000 by 2015. And it's election night tonight, by the way, around America, sort of a Super Tuesday of sorts. And some of the polls are closing right now. Of course, not in your state, not in my state, but somewhere they're closing. Maybe in Newfoundland they're closing. Tierra del Fuego, have they closed in Tierra del Fuego yet? Who won the election, Tierra del Fuego? The All-Penguin Party won in Tierra del Fuego. That's right, the All-Penguin Party. They're running as an anti-incumbent party, the All-Penguin Party. Blanche Lincoln's predicament in Arkansas can be attributed to any number of factors. Senator Lincoln's missteps put her at risk in today's ARC runoff. ARC runoff. Arkansas. Arkansas. So we'll see what's going to happen in Arkansas. I hear the polls have closed in Newfoundland, America's 53rd state, Newfoundland. They're closed in have they closed yet in Iceland? They should have closed in Iceland because they're ahead of us by the clock. They're closer to Greenwich Mean Time. There's something racist about basing a clock based on Britain's colonial past. Why should the time begin in Britain? I thought about that. I mean, really, if you want to keep up with the modern times, they should reset the clocks of the world, and it shouldn't be Greenwich Mean Time. That's Greenwich, England. That's kind of very, very imperialist. That's when Britain ruled the seas and Britain ruled the world. I think that they should make it Riyadh Mean Time, because they certainly are meaning Riyadh. San Francisco, 860 on the dial. Scott, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
So Rahm Emanuel said you never want to let a disaster go to waste. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on how the administration might be capitalizing on the oil spill.
Very simple. They're already talking about taxing the oil drillers. That's the first thing Democrats do, is tax industry to kill it. And then they want to take over the oil drilling industry and give the contracts out through to their cronies. It's called crony capitalism. Look, the health care bill was about stealing the health care industry and giving it to Nancy Pelosi, Barney Frank, and the others who stole the industry and give it to their friends. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Okay. They're going to do the same thing with the oil industry. These people couldn't drill a tooth, let alone a 4,000-foot well. But what they're going to do is steal control of the oil drilling industry, and then they're going to let the contracts to oil drillers, who will turn out be the very same oil drilling companies that are doing the job now, because they're the only ones who know how to do it. The only thing is they'll skim the vig off the top, and it'll go back to Pelosi and to Barney Frank and to the other wonderful Democrats. It's a scam. It's criminality. This is gangster capitalism. We have become a South American nation under Obama. Don't get me started on this. I can tell you I see this from a mile away. This is not crony capitalism. It's gangster capitalism. Paul, New York City, WOR, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation. That's all. Next case, Gone with the Wind. What time is it? It's time for a break. I talked about the itch. I talked about the meal. I talked about the oil spill. I primed already the fact that we know nothing about the results tonight because it's too early. What else is there? There's nothing. I ran through the whole batch of preparation already. There is some other stuff, you know, what the one bad joke. Let's see the questions I wrote earlier. You see, the problem with talk radio is I prepare from 8 o'clock in the morning. Actually, I'm dreaming the show now, and it's starting to bother me because I'm dreaming yesterday's show or tomorrow's show. Here are the questions for the Savage Nation that I wrote at 10 this morning. Do you feel Obama has failed to contain the oil spill because of inexperience? What's the worst mistake Obama has made in the Gulf? Did Obama condemn Helen Thomas's comments strongly enough? Nancy Pelosi was shouted off the stage by a group of liberal hecklers. If even the left is rejecting Pelosi, do you feel that America has finally awakened to the danger of the Obama-Pelosi regime? And finally, do you feel it's a sign of weakness that months after he passed health care, Obama is still making speeches around the country today, trying to convince people it was the right thing to do? And in case you missed the joke I wrote, I hear the Obama Navy is commissioning a new ship called the Barney Frank. But instead of launching it, they'll be raunching it. I'll be right back. Well, it's Super Tuesday with Super BS out there. I mean, Whitman and, you know, Fiorina, big deal. We're going to get a Schwarzenegger in a skirt, no matter who wins. They're going to run to the right to appeal to the Schmendricks who think that they're conservatives. And the minute they win, they'll be the super liberals that they always were. So I'm, I'm not sanguine about them doing anything different. I like that word. Doesn't really apply, but I'm not sanguine about it at all. Fiorina, big deal. Sounds like Farina to me. More pablum in plain English. Tens of millions of dollars in television spots for the Republican race for governor. It's unbelievable. It's astounding to me. And look what we have on the other side. Take a look at the other side. A retread. A retread. A former governor from 50 years ago, or 40 or 30. No one even remembers how long ago. I think when Eisenhower was president, Jerry Brown was governor. Box is seeking a fourth term in Washington to bring change. Box is going to bring change. Can you imagine this? Barbara Boxer is going to bring change. If they'll reelect me, and we'll have real change and real hope with Barbara Boxer. I don't even think her mother would believe that. What else is going on? Meg Whitman had spent more than $80 million, including $71 million of her own money, in her first quest for public office. In her opponent is Steve Poizner. The state insurance commissioner put in $24 million of his own money. Do you hear? You understand when I said you were living in an oligarchy, what that means? An oligarchy means a government of, by, and for the rich. That's what an oligarchy is. How could you ever run against people with that kind of money? How is it possible? And does it matter if they say they're Republicans or Democrats at the end of the day? Hi, John, it's Meg Whitman, and I'm calling because, as you know, I'm running for governor of California, she said. Really, great. I never used eBay myself. I kind of understand it's an auction gallery on the internet. I guess it's very lucrative. But I'm not too excited about any of the elections around the country, are you? Look what happened with Scott Brown. Remember you cheered? Like the loneliness of the long-distance runner, you all said, oh my God, look at that, he took Kennedy's seat and he's a Republican. Who was the first one and the only one in the conservative media within a day to tell you not so fast? Scott Brown is a politician, a career politician. He's going to disappoint you. And how long did it take for you to realize I was right? Unfortunately, I was right. It's not that cynicism is always the correct decision, by the way. Anyone could be a cynic for a living and be right 50% of the time. It's just that I had watched so many segments of The Brotherhood on Showtime that I knew that the Scott Brown from Massachusetts was going to be another get-along guy, and he was. Where's he been in the last few months? Have you heard him on any of the major issues? Where is he? And where's Mitt Romney on the Gulf oil spill? Where was Mitt Romney on the health care bill? Where's Mitt Romney on the crisis in the Middle East? Mitt Romney calling. Calling Mitt Romney. Where are you, Mitt Romney? Calling Sarah Palin. Where are you, Sarah Palin? Calling Sarah Palin. Calling Mitt Romney. All the leaders on the other side. Where are you in the Gulf disaster? You haven't said a word. Again, it's people in Louisiana who are saying, we want this done, we want that done, and the government's not helping us. So where are the Republicans? I mean, they're very, very good on putting down Obama, which we'd expect. That's the way the game is played. But where's the leadership from the Republican side? Not one word about the biggest environmental disaster in history. Where's Al Gore on it, by the way? Why has Al Gore been absolutely silent on the Gulf oil spill? Has anyone figured that one out? Look, boys and girls, I'm going to now take you into the graduate level of the Savage Nation. We are now in an advanced seminar where we sit around, as I did in my PhD years, with five or six students in the class and one professor. My best seminar was one professor and one student. Actually, he was a fabulous professor. I forget his name, but it was in medical anthropology, and he was teaching a summer class, and I got him alone myself. He was a famous and a very nice man. And he said, what we're going to do is we're going to have a one-on-one. This is the way to learn. This is the only way to learn, is one professor, one student. Whether it's in martial arts or in anything else, I don't believe in group. You know, groups are good if you can only afford to go to a group class. But truthfully, the best class is you and the teacher. And in radio, many ways, it's very funny. It really is like a one-on-one class, because you're probably alone somewhere in a mental hospital or a prison cell listening to the Savage Nation. And Professor Savage is now going to take you into the seminar. And we're going to have a one-on-one. What's the topic? I forgot already. I got so distracted with my diversion. Beowulf, what was I going to talk about? Nobody remembers. How to cure an itch. I'm going to tell you how to cure an itch if you get a disseminated dermatological itch. Here's how to cure it. I know, I really forgot what I was going to teach you. What was the seminar again that I was going to give you? I forgot already. It was an interesting topic, but I lost the train of thought. Honestly, it never happens to me. I'm a little distracted. Someone called me before the show, and I usually go into a dark room, and I got very distracted with the call, and it blew off a little bit of the show today. These things happen. People will distract you on purpose. Sometimes they do it by accident. California, the candidates. Can anyone remind me what I was going to talk about? Doug, is anyone calling? We have a couple of minutes where they can remind me. I don't even want to take over. Go to the next topic. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Florida, Greg, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
You know, I was just thinking, if Obama just had the tiniest shred of honor, he would resign.
But I said that last week, don't you remember?
Well, I don't know if I was listening at the time, but I, you know.
See,
I,
you get a demerit. Actually, when the host starts hearing his own ideas coming back at him from callers who don't even remember they heard it from him, he knows he's winning the Hypnopedia Award. The brainwashing award is... Doug, do we have a caller who remembers what I was talking about? Not yet. No, he doesn't remember. The screener doesn't remember. The producer doesn't remember. And the assistant producer doesn't remember. The owner of the syndication doesn't remember. No one remembers what I was talking. No one knows what I was talking about. So why give it? Why give the seminar? It's June 8th. Everyone's already on vacation. Oh, thank you, Beowulf. You just earned your reward. The seminar question, ladies and gentlemen, in the seminar is, why is Al Gore not speaking about America's greatest disaster, environmental disaster in history, when he's such an expert on the environment? After all, he gave himself a Nobel Prize in the environment, right? So wouldn't you think that the world's biggest genius in environmental affairs would have some solutions to the oil spill? Well, the answer is Al Gore's ties to big oil go way back. I'm one of the only people left in American history who knows that Daddy Gore, who was then Senator Al Gore's father, the senator from Tennessee, retired from the Senate and took a big plum job with Occidental Petroleum, which was then owned by Armand Hammer. And he ran Occidental Petroleum for a very long period of time until he ran Occidental Coal Company. And then along came Baby Gore. Baby Gore inherited all that money from big oil. And one of the first things Baby Gore did was he sold off all the oil in the U.S. Naval Oil Reserve. That's right. We no longer have a Naval Petroleum Reserve. Al Gore sold it off. He privatized it. And if you follow the oily tracks, they run all the way back to Occidental. Seven. is the Savage Nation. Look, we can talk about Obama from today until tomorrow. We know he's over his head. We know his dangerous inexperience has caused the disasters we're facing, including the greatest budget blowout in history. No one's stopping him. He's on the road peddling health care again, even though he passed it, thinking you're so stupid that you'll start talking about health care again instead of the greatest environmental disaster in history. Biden's off to Africa. Rush Limbaugh's off to Africa. Maybe they're meeting up in Africa to talk about Al Gore. I don't know what they're doing there. And where is Rahm Emanuel? So I'd like to bring up some kind of whimsical segment, which is a whatever happened to segment. Whatever happened to it? I'm going to focus today on missing newswomen, women who were once in the news who have disappeared. So whatever happened to one, Andrea Koppel. Remember her? Ted Koppel's daughter with the red hair. And she had a twisted mouth, and they gave her makeup and they gave her a new makeup job and pearls. They made her, in other words, they did for her. She got the same makeup person that Kagan got. It still didn't work. She lasted about 3 months. Where is Andrea Koppel today? What other newswomen have gone missing? Women who were once prominent in the news and then disappeared from public view. For example, it's so long ago you wouldn't remember her. But where is she? Whatever happened to her? Where did they go? You know, old newswomen never die. They just lose their, I don't know where I go with that one, but we could make signs up about that. Old newscasters never die. They just lose their, whatever. We got to fill that one in. I was thinking about that because I'm looking at the media. I'm on the New York Post site. It's so unbelievable what they're running today. Paris pals with Jersey Shore gang. I mean, this is like the skank of the week. First of all, I don't know what the Jersey Shore is. It's a bunch of untalented losers who don't make any money, who put on a lot of makeup and big hair, and apparently losers watch them on television. So now you have Paris Hilton joining them. For some reason, I haven't... Okay, next. Let's go to the top of the Post to show you what they're selling. Exclusive. Texas Hold'em stud dies on flight to World Series of Poker. Now, there's a top story. A morbidly obese Long Island man flying to the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas died on board the flight of an apparent heart attack. The Post has learned Paul Smalls Kitsos, who owned a successful women's apparel company, was aboard, blah, 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 and he died. New York schools may trim hot lunch options. Remember when they laughed at Reagan because he counted ketchup as a vegetable? Remember that? I guess under a proposal by Mayor Bloomberg, they're going to count a cardboard gefilte fish as a fish portion or something like that. New York schools may trim hot lunch option. Oh, that's terrible. That's a bad joke. No, he could put a cardboard piece of fish on the plate, couldn't he? In the virtual world, wouldn't that count as fish, as a fish portion? It wouldn't matter. The kids wouldn't eat it if it was real anyway. New York City school children may see fewer choices at the lunch line next fall. Poor babies. They need three meals a day. When I went to school, there were kids who didn't eat all day long. They did just fine. The mother didn't give them a hot meal. They ate nothing. They were skinny and tough. They could beat the hell out of you. The ones who ate, you could push them around like a blimp. The ones who ate a full breakfast, a full lunch, and a full dinner, you could push them over. They were like obese. They wound up playing hold them. The kids who were the meanest were the ones who they denied lunch. The mother was usually a rummy somewhere. The father was a super in the bottom of the building shoveling ashes. And they didn't feed the kids. They had a rummage. They were usually lean. They were the kids today who would be like in the military, like in the Marines right away. They get like tattoos on their neck. No, the schools serve cold sandwiches. You ever eat a cold sandwich in a school cafeteria? To this day, I get a headache thinking of the tomato soup smell in the school cafeteria. Nobody I knew would have eaten the hot food that they served in the cafeteria. The matrons who served the food could have been extras in an Auschwitz movie. They scared the hell out of you. No, I don't mean to make light of it, but did you ever see those women who took those jobs? Brewer said that for many kids, school lunch may be their only hot meal of the day. And if they had more choices, they're more likely to eat it. Wait a minute, let me figure this out. We have an obesity epidemic, but they're stooping food down children's throats. Horrible food like government cheese and government chicken soup because they can't get rid of the tomatoes and the dairy. Under a proposal by Bloomberg, schools that offer three hot lunch options would offer just two. Yeah, well, oh, poor babies. And schools that offer two hot lunch options would offer none. Oh, would offer one. So they're still going to get one hot lunch option. Oh, poor babies. I can guarantee you the prisoners at Guantanamo get more of a choice than the kids do in school, though, by the way. They get three halal meals per day. Probably three choices per meal per day. You know, with the new prayer books, they can read how to kill the infidel. Entertainment. I have an addiction to, I have to tell you this. I don't have an internet addiction as much as I have a horoscope addiction. I know that you religious people don't like horoscopes. I read it every day. It's crazy. Sometimes it's so right, it's unbelievable to me. I think I'm going to sue Big Horoscope for the addiction. Beowulf, is there a group called, can you get me a lawyer to sue Big Astrology for me? I want to sue Big Astrology for addicting millions of people around the world. Aries, with Jupiter and Uranus aligned in your sign, I never liked the word Uranus, I'm sorry. With Jupiter and Uranus aligned in your sign, I just don't like that planet. Who came up with that? Who was the perv who named that planet? I'd like to know. With Jupiter and Uranus aligned in your sign, there is nothing you cannot do if you put your mind to it. Again, push myself again. Don't waste your opportunity. Do something with it. If not, you'll kick yourself for months. Oh, please. I am such a super achiever. I don't need advice like that. I should have advice like that says you've worked hard enough. You wrote 110,000 word book. Stop it already before you kill yourself like the fat guy in the plane to the World Series of Poker. Take a vacation. Take a break. Go to Rome. Watch a Fellini movie. Ride a horse. Do something. Get off the radio for a month, Michael. No, instead it says don't waste this opportunity. Do something with it. Again, push yourself, Aries. Push, push, push. Too much push or no good, my Italian friend's father taught us. So why are they pushing me so hard? I'll never understand horoscopes. But as I say, I want to sue Big Astrology. Portland, Oregon. Jason, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I was sitting here driving down the I-5 thinking about your comment earlier about why Al Gore hasn't responded. And I'm kind of inclined to believe that he's waiting for the catastrophe to get to its worst point, at which point then he'll claim that President Obama's doing nothing, and then he'll make a run for the presidency in 2012.
You think he's going to run in the primary against Hillary Clinton again?
I think so. I believe.
I mean, you think that the Clintons, it's like the Hatfields and the McCoys, the Clintons and the Gores.
It goes back and forth to whoever had the most power at the time.
You may be right. I don't know what he was thinking. I know we just got a divorce, the divorcing him and Tipper. That's a big, no one's speculating on that. We had one call on the Gore divorce, which was very smart, that they're doing it for financial reasons. Oh, my God. Wait a minute. That could fit this theory because let's say his net worth is $1 billion, and I don't know what it is. I'm coming up with a round number. He made a fortune on the global warming scam. And so let's say it's $1 billion. I don't know what it is. Let's say it's a bill. So they get a divorce, and Tipper gets to hold $959 million, or $990 million of it. And he says his net worth is only $9 or $10 million. So he sounds almost poor compared to the other candidates, right? You understand they have to file. And if he files and says his net worth is between $1 and $1 billion, it's not going to look good because then he'll be seen as rich as Nancy Pelosi from the healthcare business. So he can't do it. That could be why he's divesting himself of assets before running for office. That would make sense. Many people get divorced for financial reasons, by the way. First, people speculate maybe he's going to face lawsuits because of, you know, the scam against Big Environment or whatever. But I don't know why. But he could be running again. Oh, God, spare us the Hatfield and McCoys again. The Clintons versus the Gores, not again. Certain dramas never end. Whatever happened to missing newswoman? Number one, Andrea Koppel. Where is she now? By the way, there's another person I want to mention. I have no vendetta against Andrea Koppel. I just used to sit in astonishment when the nepotism got her that job. And she had a twisted mouth, which was very bad for news people. I mean, at least Fox has women who are beautiful on there. Gorgeous. You could watch them all day. And they don't even have screechy voices, okay? This one had nothing. So, okay, she's probably teaching communications at Harvard or something like that. And that's where they would normally go. The children have to listen to her. Oh, she wants to work for ABC. There was another one that I was thinking about who almost ruined her father's career in movies. That was Coppola's daughter. And again, nothing personal. I don't know the family. We all enjoyed Godfather 1. We all enjoyed Godfather 2. Now, we all went to the movies. I'll never forget the day. I can tell you where and when I was when GF3 opened. I went to a theater in Marin, a 70-millimeter movie when I still went to movies. Here was the sequel, Godfather 3. And it's the infamous scene with Andy Garcia, who was, if you remember at the time, an actor. Today he's working as a busboy in the Concord Hotel in Monticello, New York. He's running the largest station in the Concord Hotel, which is now a homeless shelter. At that time, Andy Garcia was an up-and-coming actor, good-looking young guy. And the famous love scene was between him and the leading lady in GF3. Out comes Coppola's daughter. There was a noticeable gasp in the auditorium. There must have been 2,000 people. They went, oh. They were shocked. She looked like Helen Thomas as a young woman. And nobody could believe that a director would use a young Helen Thomas as a lead, even if it was his daughter. A man who made such great movies wouldn't do that to himself. But his career never survived that, by the way. Nepotism can ruin a person's career. Do you remember that? I'm just thinking out loud. We're just kibitzing here like it's the Cafe Savage, like I used to do in the early days. You can only do politics for so long. Do you remember when I used to do Cafe Savage? And raise your hands. If you remember when I used to do afternoon radio and we'd have the sound of cafes clinking glasses and cups, and I said, make believe. No, that's too Frenchy for me. Turn it off. That's a little too Marais Chevalier, which is a little on the child molestation. You know, every little reason, little girl. The guy was a molester. There's no question in my mind there was a sicko there with the spats and the gloves and the cane. This guy was a sick one. That's why the French love him so much, him and Woody Allen. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind why Woody Allen's popular in France. It's where it belongs. I wish he'd move there and open a restaurant called Katz's. Woody Allen's Katz's restaurant, where we serve the worst food on earth. We enslave you with our corned beef. But I used to have Cafe Savage, where it was the sound of clinking cups and glasses. I remember we had the sound effect. And I would say to people, come on into the cafe, make believe it's my cafe. I'm behind the bar. And I'm serving you, you know, espresso, cappuccino, macchiato. In San Francisco, they have 5,000 names for coffee, and they're all bad. Go try to get a regular coffee. They never heard of it. They look like you're crazy. I went to Starbucks the other day. They do it to me every time when they get a new crew of kids who just graduated college in finance and can't get a job. So they take a job as a barrister. I don't laugh at the kids. Look, they have to start somewhere. So I go in every time. It's the same thing. I say, I'll have a small coffee. The guy says, you want a tall coffee? I said, small. He said, we call a tall small. I said small. I don't care how your brain is twisted. Why would you call a small tall? What do you think, I'm stupid? I mean, why would you call a small coffee a tall coffee and a big coffee? What do you call a big coffee? A giant, you schmuck? I almost get into an argument with them every time. I said a small coffee. Then I get guilty for arguing with a kid who's making minimum wage, and I always leave a dollar tip, which I do. I'm an overtipper. Some are overachievers. I'm an overtipper. I don't mean to argue with everybody, but stupidity gets to me no matter where I turn. If I order a small coffee, I don't want the schmuck with pimples to say, oh, you want a tall coffee. And they do it, by the way, to just ride you. They know what you mean. If the kid was taught anything by Starbucks, when a customer comes in and give me a small coffee, say, okay, you don't have to lecture him that it's called a tall in our establishment because you're alienating the customer. He might come back, you know, and you might have a job another day if you actually said, okay. They always, something about San Francisco is everyone here, no matter how lowly they are, they have to correct you. No matter who you are, whatever you say to them, they correct your words. Whatever, wherever, whatever call it is, you call a plumber, you say A, they say B. They try to correct your pronunciation or your enunciation or your spelling. I never saw anything like this. And most of them are illiterate morons and never went to school. That's why I say, when I say small, I mean small. I don't mean tall. I'll be right back. Savage. Whatever happened, someone asked me, whatever happened. Remember I said, whatever happened to missing newswomen, Andrea Koppel? Number two, someone said, Cokie Roberts. Where is she today? That name always threw me off. I'm sorry. Who would name a child Cokie? I'm sorry. Pardon me. Would you think that would be like a lifetime impediment? Your daughter's name is Cokie? Why don't you name your son Cracky? Maybe she had a brother, Cracky Roberts. I mean, that may explain the problem. New York City, WOR, Bill, welcome to the Savage Nation. God.
Dr. Savage.
Yes, sir.
Old newswomen never die, just that the ratings start to sag after a while.
Oh, boy, that's a good one. You know, when I was a kid, but everyone had, like, the parents with their houses had the finished basement. And the thing was, they build a bar, and they'd put up those little signs, like, old golfers never die, they just lose their you-know-what, right?
Yeah.
You remember those signs? They were cute. I never understood half of them. You grow too soon old and too late smart. I didn't even understand it, but I knew it was funny as a kid. But they would laugh about that. So, but that would be a good one. When I create my old retirement bar, it'll say old newswomen never die. They just, their ratings, how did you put it? Old newswomen never die. They just.
After a while, the ratings start to sag.
Oh, God. That is so nasty. In a nice way, you're a nice guy, by the way, but I would make it nastier than that. Old newsmen never die, they just drop their ratings? No, that's not as funny. It isn't. I hear that Helen Thomas and Jorn Vandersloot are getting a new gig together on ABC News. Can you imagine that would be the biggest rated show in history, Jorn Vandersloot interviewing Helen Thomas or vice versa? I know Larry King would interview Jorn Vandersloot. So, when you wrap the panties around your neck, how did it feel, huh? You talk about a degenerate, a loser. I mean, this guy, you hear about a degenerate gambler? Larry King is like a degenerate psychopath. So, how did it feel when you slashed her up down there in the room, huh? What was it? What are you, a big Dutchman? You got a thing with girls, huh? That's the media for you today. Tucson, Arizona. Grant, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Just now that the mood's lightened up a little bit, I wanted you to tell a story.
Which one?
The story about your dad's friend who was doing really well, and then you went off to college and came back. And
Oh, my God, the Leather Man. Oh, boy. Did you ever get a copy of A Psychological Nudity where you could read that story?
Definitely.
No, I mean, you have the book?
No, but I listen to the show religiously, so.
All right, stay on the line. I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. I'm not in the mood to tell a story. It's too sad. It'll bring me back to another death and tragedy and dying and horrible, and it's over in the casket, and he's probably just bones and the trousers, and now there's the belt is even, and the moths and the rats, and I don't want to do it. I don't actually believe death exists. You know that in order to live, you have to suspend belief in death? How do you walk around every day knowing that don't get me started with this. I'm having bad anxiety attacks every night in bed with a dog, thinking about him. Like last night, I swear to God, it was a Teddy dream with the itch and everything. My dog's all tied up with it. I'm so attached to the dog, it's getting really sick. First dream was good. He caught a mouse, and I remember the mouse dodged left, and then the mouse was going to dodge right, but Teddy saw it coming like a good football player, and he dodged right before the mouse did, and he grabbed it, and the mouse ran right in his mouth, and he bit it, and the blood squirted out. And I said, good boy, you caught the mouse. I thought that was great. That's you, Teddy, I'm talking about. This poor little guy sleeping on the floor there now. Hours, minutes, or eons later in my dream cycle, I don't know, it goes on in 3D. I can't believe it. Color, 3D, electric, stereophonic headphones in my dream. Hours later, I am walking in a busy street like a Manhattan. Huge crowds with the dog. And like a well-dressed, well-connected gangster comes up to me who somehow, I don't know, we knew each other, but I wasn't supposed to know he was a gangster. He was a politician. Only a politician. He came up to me with this big smile, no threat, and he said, when are you writing your next book? I said, I just finished my book. It's coming out in October. And he said, no, but when are you starting on your next book? And I said in a nice way, well, what do you have to do with that? And he said, well, I'm connected to your agent, so I get a piece of it, so I'd like you to start your next book. I didn't know where this dream came from. I couldn't believe this. What does this have to do with it? The next thing I turn around, the dog ran away from me in the crowd, and I'm standing there, and he's gone, and I'm screaming, Teddy, 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 and it's hopeless. He's gone forever. I knew it was over. Never would come back. It was like one of those lost dreams, and all I could think of was going home and saying to Mrs. S, I lost the dog. We're never going to get him back, but he's such a great dog that I don't think he's going to be hurt. They're not going to put him like in a pit bull training session to kill. Remember that was popular for a while? You're afraid if you lost your dog that they would put him in for to kill. And I said, this dog is so beautiful. Someone stole him who's going to love him. That's all I could say. And then it ended with, what if you were a parent and you had a 7-year-old boy who you took to school and he disappeared and it's been 5 days later and you don't know where he is? Do you know what goes on in this country? Where are the children? Where are the missing children? How can there be so many perverts running around? I said to myself.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All big story today is Obama experience and how he feels. The fact of the matter is he still thinks he's in campaign mode. And the best article on this was written by Byron York. But the fact is that everybody knows that the man is basically incapable of this job. You know, there's an interesting article in this issue of Bloomberg's Business Week, June 7th through June 13th, that's very interesting. It shows a picture of Obama surrounded by oil, and it's called Engulfed, Surviving the Spill. It says, the oil disaster engulfs a British corporate titan and an American presidency. They believe that he's finished, and they don't think he can recover. And the fact of the matter is, they say that it's no coincidence that staff members at both agencies involved with the oil spill watch pornography on government computers when they should have been monitoring their respective beats. And although corruption and incompetence seem to have run deeper at the soon-to-be-dismantled agency that Obama was overseeing, they failed. And it said that the industry that was the oversight in Obama's agency had no more idea what transpired after the spill than what happened on the trading floor at Lehman Brothers or Bear Stearns than they did on the ocean floor beneath the Gulf of Mexico. And Obama is today on the road talking about the health care plan and how good it can be, which to me indicates complete and total failure of what's going on. He does not know what is going on. He thinks the American people are stupid and he can simply go out and talk about health care again, which he won through every trick in the book and change the argument. But listen to how they conclude the article. Obama ran for president emphasizing results. Business people like to talk about results, too. After a generation of operating according to a simplistic notion that defined government oversight as essentially poisonous to corporate success, now would be an opportune time to rally the country around an ideal of tough, fair regulation for the good of business and the customers it serves. Well, that's one thing. But the fact is the Interior Secretary Ken Salazar has not moved quickly enough to root out favoritism and laxity. You can go on and on and on. The best article about it, though, is from Byron York in the Washington Examiner, which is worth quoting in part about Obama's lack of experience. And he says, the oil spill reveals Obama's lack of executive experience. And they start like this. It says, in 2008, in February, fresh from winning a bunch of Super Tuesday primaries, Barack Obama granted an interview to 60 Minutes correspondent Steve Croft. Croft said, when you sit down and look at your resume, there's no executive experience. And in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, the only thing that you've actually run was the Harvard Law Review. Obama answered, well, I've run my Senate office and I've run the campaign. 7 months later, after receiving the Democrat presidential nomination, Obama talked with CNN's Anderson Cooper. At the time, the news was dominated by Hurricane Gustav, which was headed towards New Orleans. And he said, some of your Republican critics have said you don't have the experience to handle a situation like this. Obama said, they in fact have said that Governor Palin has more executive experience than you, said Cooper. Obama answered, Governor Palin's town of Wasilla has, I think, 50 employees. We have got 2,500 in this campaign. I think their budget is maybe $12 million a year. You know, we have a budget of about three times that just for the month. So I think that our ability to manage large systems and to execute, I think, has been made clear over the last couple of years. Obama ignored Palin's experience as governor of Alaska, which was considerably bigger than the Obama campaign. But his point was clear, says Byron York. If you're worried about my lack of my executive experience, look at my campaign. And he goes on. And then Byron York writes, fast forward to 2010. The oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico is gushing out of control. The Obama administration is first slow to see the seriousness of the accident. Then as the crisis becomes clear, the federal bureaucracy becomes entangled in itself trying to deal with the problem. At least a dozen federal agencies have taken part in the spill response, the New York Times reports, making decision-making slow, conflicted and confused as they sought to apply numerous federal statutes. So in other words, they didn't know what the hell they were doing. Obama's dangerous inexperience is the topic, not of the day, but of the season. He is dangerously inexperienced. And here's how Obama failed on the oil spill. One, he failed to show up in the Gulf until 12 days after the rig blew up. Obama was nowhere in the early days of the spill, and the federal government took no action. Obama's federal government was slow to use dispersant chemicals to break up the oil. Obama failed to mobilize enough boats to deploy booms and containment devices and left it up to local officials. Obama failed by insisting this was BP's problem. The spill happened in U.S. waters. Obama could have used the military to help. He didn't. Obama failed to ask Japan, France, China, and Russia for help, even though these countries have deep-sea submarines and robots that can work a mile under the ocean. Obama failed to get rid of the corruption in the Interior Department. Obama failed to erect barrier berms. If Obama had done half of these things, he might have prevented the worst environmental disaster in history. Even John McShane, with all his hemming and hawing, would have gotten angry and demanded immediate action from his subordinates. But because Obama knows how to run a campaign but not a government, this is the result. The worst environmental disaster in American history. Also in the news today is that BP client gave Rahm Emanuel a rent-free D.C. apartment for years. Now you may understand why there's no outrage against BP. Maybe this is why it's taking the White House so long to do something about this BP oil spill. Joe Biden is off to Africa now for some reason. Because of the ongoing crisis of the oil spill, Vice President O'Biden has been dispatched to Africa for a while. Can you believe this? Obviously, Democratic President Barack Obama feels he can handle the pressure alone of yet another major presidential music party and any more job offers through rebel Democrats, not to mention the nation's $13 trillion national debt, which under his administration is now projected to surpass the nation's entire economic output. Why is Biden going to Africa? According to a White House trip outline, Biden will meet with key leaders in Egypt, Kenya, and South Africa, as opposed to irrelevant leaders. Can you believe this? And then in South Africa, since Biden did such a good job watching the opening of the Olympic Winter Games in Vancouver earlier this year, he watched the opening of the 2010 World Cup. Because of abundant criticism that he's enjoying, Paul McCartney and other cool artists during the country's worst ever environmental disaster are off playing golf instead of attending things like the funeral of a Poland's president, Obama didn't acknowledge, etc. You get it, don't you? So there it is. That's the Obama administration. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Television today seems to have lost something when compared to some of the earlier shows from the 50s and 60s. These shows had a real story and really pretty good acting. One of these shows was The Virginian, which ran for 9 seasons. Joining us now is one of the stars of the show, James Drury. James, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much for having me on today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, what's your best memory from this show, The Virginian?
Oh, just the fabulous feeling of getting up every morning and going down to the studio and working with all these wonderful actors and actresses that were so prominent at that time. Our screenwriters had a chance, because of our 90-minute format, to write big, extensive, gorgeous, chewy guest star roles for men and women, and they came to play the parts. You know, actors will walk barefooted over broken glass to play a part they want to play, and we attracted some of the biggest names and biggest talents in the industry, and it was such a thrill to go to work with them every day. In addition to my own cast and our own cast, who were by no means unformidable, then we had all these wonderful guest stars to come in, and it always kept things so interesting and so vital. And those are my best memories of being able to work with George C. Scott and Joan Crawford and Betty Davis and Lee Marvin and Charles Bronson, and the list just goes on and on. We had Robert Redford and Harrison Ford at one time when he was first starting out. And that's quite a formidable lineup, I'll tell you. And we got a great deal of satisfaction in working with those people, because they give you so much. You know, acting is give and take, and they give you so much to work with.
Why do you think the Westerns have, for the most part, disappeared?
Well, I don't. You know, there are many, many, many reasons. I'm not. I'm not the guy who can really tell you the chapter and verse on that, except that Westerns have a favor primarily, I think, because we had so many of them on the air. There are only a certain number of stories you can tell in a Western, and I would be shooting the Virginian and then come home and sit down to watch High Chaparral or any of the big Westerns and see the same basic story that we were shooting on the soundstage that day was on the screen in front of me. So, somebody once wrote a book called The 37 Dramatic Situations, which is the number of plots that are available to all playwrights and all screenwriters and in all of the entertainment, all of dramaturgy, if you will. And I think that when you come to a Western, you cut that 37 figure down quite considerably because we don't do poison and we don't do sword fights, you know. So it's a much reduced list. And we just, at one time, there were 15 and a half hours of Western programming on television at every week. And that's a great deal. You can you just kind of meet yourself coming back. Also, I think that it's a generational thing. My grandfather was born in Kentucky, raised in Missouri, and came west with a wagon train to Oregon. And he taught me about all the Indian fights and the wagon trains and the settlers moving across the country. And I learned those stories at his knee. And my children certainly don't have that connection, and their children certainly don't have it. So as we get farther and farther from the period of history that was known as the Old West, it sort of recedes into our consciousness, and I think people are not aware of it as much, although the timeless stories and timeless lessons that we learned in a Western, the triumph of good over evil, and the morality play that a Western is, and showing that perseverance pays off and that good will prevail, those things need to be heard today as well as just as much as they were needed to be heard in those days. And 48 years later, I'm so happy that they're out on the air. They're on Encore, as you well know, or I think you know, twice a day nationwide, and also the first and second season of the show is out on DVD, and we're coming out with a whole nine seasons. And then we came out with this commemorative edition of the first season, all in one container, and it's really lovely. I'm very proud of it.
It seems that today's TV shows lack the moral compass that the older shows had.
Well, I think there are some that are morally ambiguous, and I think there are some shows on the air that have a clear hero and a clear villain in every episode. I admire NCIS very much. I admire the Law and Order shows, all the different variations of Law and Order. I think there was a great deal of value to some of the shows that they're coming on with, and I think there's a new show on. I think it's on syndication I can't really name the network because I'm not sure right now, but Burn Notice is a great show, and this new show, Human Target, is a great show. So I think the heroic image is kept alive, but there's a lot. The problem is the producers discovered some years ago when there was a rumor of a writer's strike that they'd have to come up with something where there wasn't a scripted show. So they invented the reality show, or either went back to the formula of the reality show, and now reality shows prevail. And the problem is every time a reality show goes on the air, 75 actors go out of work. So I kind of shudder for the acting profession because there are fewer and fewer places for a trained actor to get a job and to be able to have gainful employment. And it's a shame. I wish the American people would stop watching reality shows, and they might force the networks to bring back some serious drama that would be worth watching, done by actors that are trained to do so, you know.
Well, is there any real big interest in these shows today?
I hope that everyone will continue to watch the Virginian on Encore and continue to buy the DVDs and have a treasured permanent memory of fine Western. And, of course, on Encore you can see Have Gun, Will Travel and Gunsmoke and Cheyenne and some other great Westerns. So there is a great longing in this country to see those shows. And I'm excited about the fact that some of my friends tell me their grandchildren are watching these shows without even being prompted to. They're just sitting down and watching them because they like them. So that's very, very gratifying to me. And, of course, since these two events have happened, the DVD and the DVD release and the Encore release, I've become very much in demand around the country, and I'm traveling around quite a bit. I've just went to Mark Twain's hometown, Hannibal, Missouri, and did a little Mark Twain festival. And then I was in Portsmouth, Ohio, for the annual Roy Rogers Festival. And now I'm up at Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, for a big regional gun show. So there's a lot of interest right now in the Western and in me in particular, and it's very gratifying.
James Drury, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael, very much for your time on the air. I enjoyed it very much, and I hope to be able to talk to you again soon.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Joining us now with an exclusive Savage Nation report is Eric Stackelbeck.
Hey, Michael, always great to be here. Thanks. Well, I figured since we spoke about Anwar al-Awlaki the last time I was on, we talked all about this guy who is now the most influential Islamic jihadist in the world. He surpassed, Michael, even Osama bin Laden as the most influential Islamic jihadist in the world, involved with the Times Square bombing, Fort Hood shooting, underwear bomber Christmas Day. Very, very bad guy, al-Qaeda kingpin, al-Qaeda cleric. Well, there's been some exclusive new developments that I've uncovered about al-Awlaki and his popularity here, right here in the Washington, D.C. area. But before I get to that, there's been two more developments with him, Michael, in the past few days. Number one, late last week, a Muslim man in Texas was arrested, charged with conspiring to aid al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which Mr. al-Awlaki is a member of. Now, this guy was in email contact with Anwar al-Awlaki. Once again, the al-Awlaki link. He's the head of the snake in so many Islamic terror plots over the last 6 months, starting with Fort Hood, stretching to Times Square. Now, this Texas man, al-Awlaki apparently sent him a pamphlet online about jihad.
No.
And I'll tell you, Michael, the pamphlet about jihad that was sent, I'm sure it wasn't about spiritual jihad and spiritual struggle. Oh, no, no, no. It was the traditional meaning of jihad, which is military conquest. So we have a Texas man indicted on those charges, in touch with al-Awlaki. We had two men arrested in the North Jersey, New York City area, plotting to join al-Qaeda, travel to Somalia, and kill Americans. They were inspired by Anwar al-Awlaki. Once again, Michael, this guy is everywhere. He's so influential, as you and I discussed last time. He's fluent in English, and that can't be understated. He is able to connect directly to young Muslims in the United States and Europe because he breaks down that language barrier, and he knows our Western culture because he was born here and educated here. Well, well, well. He's also still very popular here, Michael, as I discovered recently.
Why do you say that?
There is a store. I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C. right now. There's a store in Northern Virginia, Falls Church, Virginia, to be exact, about a five-mile drive from the White House, the nation's capital. It's called Halalco. Now, Michael, what this store is, it's half supermarket, half Islamic supermarket, where they sell halal meats, great pita bread imported from the Middle East, etc. But the other end of this huge store, it's the largest of its kind in the D.C. area, by the way. The other end of the store is devoted to selling Islamic books, Islamic DVDs, Islamic CDs, burqas, hijabs, Islamic attire. It's all there. So I had heard some things about this store over the past year, and I figured, hey, I'm going to go in and investigate. So over the past few months, Michael, I've been making periodic stops into this store called Halalco, just outside of Washington. What I found there troubled me deeply.
Well, what is that?
They were selling radical Islamist CDs and DVDs, Muslim Brotherhood ideologues, Saudi sheikhs, radical Pakistani clerics. All their works were represented in this store on the bookshelves, and also anti-Semitic works, notorious anti-Semitic works, Michael, I purchased there, including the Protocols of Zion. Several copies of the Protocols of Elders of Zion, which, as you know, is a notorious anti-Semitic forgery that's been used to incite anti-Semitic violence against Jews for well over a century now. So these are the kind of materials I found at this store. And, you know, I had them sitting there on the desk at work for the past few months and said, man, I know I have a story here. These are bad guys. But what's my hook? I need to find that big, big hook. So I go in there, Michael, on May 24th, pay a return visit to Halalco for the first time in a while. Mind you, this is one day after our good buddy Anwar Alaki released a tape, a videotape, calling for the killing of American civilians. So the next day after this tape is released, I walk into this store, and what's the first thing I see? An entire display. I'm about 6'4", so this display was about 7 feet high. An entire display devoted entirely to the works of none other than Anwar al-Awlaki.
Oh, my God.
This store was selling dozens of CDs and DVDs by Awlaki. I believe the deal, according to the sign on the big display, was two for $20. This is a problem. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is a guy who's a wanted Islamic terrorist, who's a top al-Qaeda ideologue. U.S. intelligence officials tell me he's even more influential than bin Laden right now. And we have a store just outside the nation's capital openly selling his CDs and DVDs. Call me crazy. That's a big problem. So the next that day, I confronted management right away. I said, hey, I showed him the DVDs, I showed him the CDs of Awlaki, also showed him Protocols of Zion, the Muslim Brotherhood stuff. They had also a book by a convicted terrorist named Abu Hamza al-Masri. I said, what are you selling here? The guy got very nervous. He said, come back tomorrow, talk to the owner. Go back, and the owner of the store, he was an immigrant from India. He's been here for about 40 years. He did go on camera with me, Michael.
Really?
He did go on camera with me, and I confronted him about these tapes and CDs. And, you know, basically with Awlaki, he pled ignorance. He said, look, we were just trying to sell them off. We were just trying to make some money. Really? Then he tells me that they are very good sellers. And the speeches the speeches in that display were nonviolent. It was just Awlaki talking about the Prophet Muhammad and different Islamic prophets and Islamic leaders throughout the centuries. So he tried to downplay it, but here's the key point, Michael. The next day when I returned to interview the owner, the shelves were completely bare. As soon as I confronted management, they knew they were doing something wrong. They completely cleared the shelves. The 7-foot-high display magically was empty of all the Awlaki materials. And he said, look, and I asked him, if I never came in here, if I never confronted you about that display, would it still be there? He answered, well, he hemmed and hawed a bit, and he answered, it is possible.
Play the clip.
If I didn't come in, would Awlaki, would that display still be up?
Frankly, we were, you know, trying to, you know, it is possible.
I think we scored a little victory there. Also, the Awlaki materials have been removed from the store's website. So we scored a small victory there. And I asked this owner about it, Michael, because Awlaki, this is the kind of stuff, obviously, as we've seen over the last 6 or 7 months with this string of terror attacks that he inspired, his stuff is what inspires ideological. It's ideological fodder for young Muslims. It's a gateway to radicalism. Anwar Awlaki's sermons are that gateway, and there was a lot in the Muslim Brotherhood stuff that I found in the store is another gateway. You know, I asked the owner about it, and he just, you know, pled ignorance, said, look, I wasn't aware of any of the content. I just order books based on their title. Really? to his credit, he went on camera, he answered the tough questions, and you can watch my story at CBNNews.com and judge for yourself how forthright he was being. But I want to key on something here, Michael, because this guy told me that the Ilaki CDs and DVDs that were on display at his store were, quote, very good sellers. To me, that's really troubling because the store is located in Falls Church, Virginia, just about a mile, less than that even, from the Dar al-Hijra Mosque. It's a radical mosque where Anwar al-Awlaki was actually the imam in the wake of the 9/11 attacks. He was in touch with two of the 9/11 hijackers who worshipped in this Northern Virginia mosque, not far from the store. So the fact that his CDs and DVDs are still selling like hotcakes in Falls Church, Virginia, is very, very troubling because, again, he is a gateway to jihad, a gateway to radicalism.
This is unbelievable to me.
It's the equivalent, Michael, of selling the CDs and DVDs, the recordings of Osama bin Laden or Ayman al-Zawahiri. That's the level now that Anwar al-Awlaki is approaching. And to give it a historical parallel, you know, I talked to the FBI about this too, Michael. I asked him about this store, and I said, hey, I talked to a spokesperson from the Washington field office of the FBI. I said, hey, are you aware about what this store is selling? And they said, look, Alaki's recordings are protected under the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's really interesting, and I'm a free speech guy 100%. I'll die for it to preserve our right to free speech. Obviously, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation without that right, Michael. But here's the historic parallel I draw. Where do you draw a line? Would we have a situation during World War II where, say, a German supermarket or a German restaurant was openly displaying recordings by Adolf Hitler? Or maybe a Japanese restaurant was openly displaying recordings from the emperor? Would we really have had that circa 1941, 1942? I highly, highly doubt it. We're in such a politically correct climate right now that this store is openly displaying the recordings of a guy, an Islamic terrorist, Al-Qaeda leader, who we're at war with. They're openly displaying his recordings just one day after he called for the killing of American civilians. Free speech, amen. But where do we draw a line? There has to be some kind of limit during a time of war, which opens up a whole other conversation, obviously. And look, the FBI says, hey, it's protected under the First Amendment, and that's great, Michael. But I think the vast majority of Americans, if they knew about this story, would be outraged. And judging by the response I got, the story aired on CBN last Wednesday, judging by the response I got, it has really, really touched a nerve and gotten a lot of people talking. And Anwar al-Awlaki, as I said, strikes again twice since the story aired. We've had two significant Islamic terror busts where al-Awlaki was once again a central, inspirational figure in those arrests. He's one to keep an eye on for sure.
Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, thank you. Always a pleasure.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Marcos Hernandez, age 23, Luis Cruz, age 27, and Joaquin Alcudia, 23, are charged with attempted murder, robbery after running a car off the road and robbing passengers in Huntsville, Alabama. Three illegal aliens, who I just named, robbed three people after running them off the road around 2 a.m. Hernandez, Cruz, and Alcudia got into an argument with the three other people early Monday in an unknown location. Anyway, they chased them, ran them off the road, and robbed them in Alabama. Isn't diversity grand? All of these articles and more can be found on michaelsavage.com. There's another great article from the Wall Street Journal that says a poll was done by Zogby and showed that American adults who identify themselves as progressive or liberal were more ignorant of basic economics than conservatives. In fact, they would flunk Economics 101. In case you missed it, you can go to my website and you can listen to the incredible soundbite of me giving the parallels of Rush hiring Elton John to sing at his wedding is like. And I said, what if Helen Thomas hired Jackie Mason to perform at her great-granddaughter's bat mitzvah in Israel and others? Don't miss it on michaelsavage.com. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places You can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. Obama did an interview today and tried to cover up his massive failure on the Gulf oil spill by making out like he had been on top of it from the beginning.
This is the largest federal response to an environmental disaster in history. From day one, we understood that this was going to be a major disaster. We have put unprecedented resources to deal with it.
But wait, Mr. President, you waited 12 days to go visit the Gulf. You refused to let the local authorities build berms to protect the coast. You refused to ask for help from other nations. You wouldn't let BP use dispersants quickly enough.
50 days or so into this, that your administration has been damaged by this oil spill.
No. First of all, I'm not concerned about my politics right now. What I'm concerned about is what's happening down in the Gulf. And I guarantee you the folks in the Gulf have been damaged by this oil spill.
You should be, Mr. President. As people are saying, this is your Katrina.
There are people who are starting to wonder out loud if the oil spill in the Gulf could do to you what Katrina did to President Bush, or even what the Iran hostage situation did to President Carter.
You know, I have to tell you, some of this is just the nature of the 24-hour news cycle. You've got a camera showing oil spilling out in the Gulf, and people are understandably frustrated. And they're upset, and they have every right to be.
What a load of malarkey. And the media continues to cover up for him. He is Douglas Brinkley, the man who called Ted Kennedy an ubermensch.
President Obama is hitting his stride. He had a very successful, I think, trip when he went down to Louisiana last week. He avoided Tony Hayward. He was disgusted by the BP commercial at this time of crisis. BP pulled Hayward as their spokesperson. Now you're seeing Mr. Dudley actually touching the oil for the first time for BP. The Obama administration rightfully did a couple of quick things that they probably haven't got enough credit for. The moratorium. You cannot start doing more well digging while this is going to be gushing for the next 3 or 4 months. And number two, the cleaning house at MMS.
And while Obama fails, Bonnie Rank rails. Here's Bonnie Rank demanding more authority for the government. You know him as Bonnie Frank. We know him as Bonnie Rank.
You can reach out to your fellow young people and make it clear to them that where they may not be satisfied with everything we've done, we're not satisfied with everything we've done, the way to cure that is to give us more authority and more ability.
And here's some amazing audio. Nancy Pelosi getting heckled by the radical left for not spending enough of your money.
Are we going to pay the price? We supported Obama. We supported you.
Yeah. I have not, I've heard your message. I hear what you're saying. I appreciate your concern. Are we going to be able to have a meeting? We're going to be able to have a meeting? Okay.
And Nancy can't seem to calm them down.
That's okay. That's okay.
I don't know if we can stop it. There's too many of them.
No, wait, just one moment. Okay, you have made your point. You have made your point to me. If you want others in the room to understand your point, okay. Yes.
Man, you're throwing stuff. We need to leave.
Look, I am going to have. Excuse me. I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving. You have made your point.
This is Graham Hancock with a special report for Michael Savage. I've been able to listen into a secret phone call that took place between former President Jimmy Carter and the now shamed Helen Thomas. Let's listen in.
As former president, I believe that the Jews are the problem for the entire Middle East, and if we could just get rid of the Jews, we could have a peaceful resolution there, but if you could just, you know, make a move and get rid of the Jews.
Get rid of the Jews? Oh, that's perfect. Jimmy, you're a genius. At my next press conference, I'm going to scream it to the rooftop. The Jews should just leave Israel.
Well, Ellen, I couldn't agree with you more. Even though I'm building houses for the homeless, I would not build a house for a homeless Jew.
Oh, Jimmy, you're so candid. I love talking to you.
Well, there you have it. A disgusting and horrifying thought. Jimmy Carter and Helen Thomas talking about Jews. Back to you, Michael Savage.
Savage first in media to call for Helen Thomas to have her press credentials pulled. Today is a primary battle across the country. It's a minor primary battle in some states and a major one in others. We'll let you know what happens today and tomorrow. All on my website. Who's attending Bilderberg 2010? Well, you'll have to read it. Iran is sending ships to Gaza. The left wing is attacking Obama as weak and detached. Don't miss the open letter to Helen Thomas. See what he really did. And a billboard puts Obama on a $100 trillion bill. You got to see this picture. It asks, who will pay the piper? All on michaelsavage.com.
Savage.